Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the webinar on e-mobility, a sustainable automotive sector, hosted by Nishit Desai Associates. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Huzaifa Tawawala. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Great to have all friends and colleagues and acquaintances for this webinar. Good morning, to our folks who have dialed in from the US. Good afternoon to our folks audience and friends who've dialed in from Europe. And best wishes, of course, to all our Asian friends. So we've got a good blend of jurisdictions across the world on this webinar. Of course, the topic, which is e-mobility, a sustainable automotive future, is not only extremely exciting and fascinating, but it is also very sensitive, right? We all know what climatic change is doing to the world. And we all know in terms of, how the automobile industry has an impact on the same. Now, the most important thing which is in relation to this space is e-mobility and how can we actually save our environment. The webinar is actually going to focus on that from an Indian perspective. So not only are we going to discuss what the incentives and what the positioning of the Government of India is specifically in relation to e-mobility, but we also have an industry panelist with us who is going to give us insights on the industry hands-on. And then, of course, lastly, we're also going to touch base on some models in terms of how do we do business in this space, specifically from a legal, regulatory, and tax perspective. So without further ado, I would like to begin this webinar and introduce my co-panelists. I will start with Arun Thomas. Arun Thomas heads the e-bus business at Sun Mobility. He has an experience of over a decade and a half. And he's also duly qualified. He's an engineer and, an MBA graduate. So great to have Arun. Alongside Arun, we have Siddharth Ratho from Nishit Desai Associates. He's a senior member of the automobile and e-mobility team and, does a lot of work on this space. Alongside, we also have Harshal Agarwal. He's a member of our regulatory and policy team and looks into the policy space, surrounding e-mobility. And last, of course, is me, Huzaifa Tawawala. I lead the disruptive technologies and e-mobility practice at Nishit Desai Associates. So, with this background, I would like to kick it off and probably I'll hand over the first question to Siddharth. It would be good, Siddharth, if you could just give a general overview in terms of what is the ecosystem in India? And in relation to the ecosystem, based on your experience, what do you think is the intent of the government when it comes to e-mobility?
Thank you, Huzaifa, and good morning and good evening to all of you who are online. So, Huzaifa, as all of you may be aware, India currently is dealing with a lot of issues pertaining to severe air pollution in urban centers. In fact, out of the 20 most polluted cities in the world, India has the distinction, the unfortunate distinction of having 14 of those cities in the top 20. Having said that, India is also undertaking various measures to curb its greenhouse emissions and also improve the air quality in these cities. It is also becoming one of the foremost things in the public mind as well, because people are dealing with these issues every day. India also has certain commitments to the Paris Climate Agreement, for which it needs to, in a very hurried manner, curb its greenhouse emissions. And one of the ways that it is looking to do so is this push towards e-mobility. Now, there is currently an ecosystem at the central and the state level system. There are various countries such as China, who have already taken a massive head start. But India, the Indian government has definitely taken certain steps towards achieving this goal. and we can talk about it in further detail as we go on.
So I think that's a good overview, Silas, where you know, touch based upon largely what seems to be the direction from a global perspective. More importantly, how does it actually impact India? And lastly, what seems to be the intent of the government? Probably taking lead from what you just said, I think you know, an immediate fallout or an immediate lead to that is that, are there any specific policies, you know, which are there at a federal, central level in the e-mobility space? And probably for something like this, Harshil, it would be good, you know, if you could share your experience on the same.
So, Zafar, yes, in fact, there are a number of policies that have been introduced by the government of India at the central level to promote the adoption of electronic vehicles and also promote the e-mobility ecosystem within India. The first and foremost of these policies is the faster adoption and manufacturing of hybrid vehicles and electronic vehicles, also known as FAME, which is an incentive scheme launched by the Department of Heavy Industries back in 2015. Currently, FAME is in the second phase of its implementation, or FAME 2, which was notified back in April 1st this year. Under the scheme, a sum of 85.96 billion rupees have been sanctioned for creating a direct demand incentive for two-wheelers and three-wheeler EVs. Also, four-wheelers which include both EVs and hybrid vehicles. The direct incentive scheme is also applicable to electrical buses. An interesting fact within the FAME 2 is that a sum of 10 billion has been specifically allocated for setting up and creation of charging infrastructure within India. Also, enough emphasis has been supplied within the policy for the maintenance and upkeeping of these charging stations. Apart from the policy, the finance minister this year in the budget also proposed various financial incentives and subsidies directly from the state, which include the insertion of Section 80EEB within the Income Tax Act. So what this section provides is a deduction which can be claimed once a person takes a loan for the purchase of an electric vehicle from any financial institution up to a sum of 1,50,000 rupees. An interesting fact within this section is that the meaning of electric vehicle has been defined broadly to include not just four-wheelers, but any other vehicle which has an electric motor and utilizes a battery. Also, the deduction is available only if the vehicle is purchased by availing a loan from a financial institution and not otherwise. In addition, even the GST Council has introduced various changes to the GST rate applicable on various products which are important for the e-mobility ecosystem, such as the GST rate applicable on electric vehicles has been reduced from a previous 12% to 5%, and the GST rate on chargers and charging stations for EVs has been reduced from an 18% to 5%. Additionally, the hiring of electrical buses by local authorities will be now exempted under GST. More light can be shed by Arun, who is directly dealing with these policies firsthand. Apart from that, another policy that the government has emphasized on is the phased increase in the basic custom duty that will be applicable on entirely built-up electronic vehicles, the various components of these electrical vehicles, and the lithium cells which go in the battery utilized for EVs. So the government has decided to undertake a phased increase in the amount of custom duty that is applicable on these products, and so that they can in fact go forward and promote the manufacturing of these products indigenously within India.
No, I think thank you for that, Harshil. So you know, what seems to be interesting is that not only are incentives provided to the OEMs slash the manufacturers, But there are also incentives which are flowing directly to the consumers in terms of direct income tax deductions. And in addition to that, you know, there is an interesting observation on the GST rates also, which are moving pieces. Of course, there is a gradual progression to all of this, and I'm sure there will be teething and implementation problems which we'll discuss subsequently in this webinar. But with this background, I think we are perfectly poised for some industry inputs, and you know, no better than since we have Arun with us. Arun, it would be great if you can share your personal experience with us, since you've been working in this space and you're closely associated, you know. So, you know, what do you in terms of your experiences?
I think the last 2 years has been very exciting in the e-mobility space. The last 2 years have seen much more action than what we've seen in the last 20 years. The government has been strongly pushing the agenda to transition, or in fact leapfrog towards e-mobility. The Central Planning Agency for the country, the Niti Aayog, has given a very clear direction, and it is setting the policy in the right direction. They've clearly stated they're focused on electrification of public transport. Shared economy is what they see the country moving towards, and there has to be a strong focus on localization. Now, apart from the policy front, the automotive industry in India is also poised in leapfrogging in the BS6 standards. So from BS4 standards, we are directly migrating to BS6 standards. At the same time, you see a stronger impetus given to the electric vehicle. So the two will coexist, and there needs to be some amount of clarity that needs to be given by the central policy on what shall be the way ahead for the government, and that is where some clarity is required. But that said, the government has done the right thing to create demand incentives and stimulate demand for public transportation. A case in point that Harshal mentioned was about the FAME II policy. Now, the FAME I policy in 2018 in the start had a program to subsidize and incentivize the procurement of 440 buses across 11 cities. Now, this happened with a mix of OPEX as well as CAPEX models, and it was left mostly to the states to choose which model they want to go for and how they want to go for. In 2019, today when they said the FAME II policy has come out, and there has been a lot of deliberations that Niti Aayog and the various agencies have gone through in the last 1 year to come up with a much more comprehensive policy where the focus is of 5,500 buses across 55 cities, and they have clearly opted for an OPEX model, because today the state transport undertakings, the city municipal corporations, cannot afford a very expensive transition to electric mobility if the vehicles are at a costlier price point at this point of time. So they want to be transitioning to an OPEX model, which is called a gross cost contract model, where these electric vehicles are taken on lease, wet lease or dry lease, and then run. And therefore, the city municipalities get to transition to electric mobility without being asset heavy. So this is a very asset light model transition that the Niti Aayog has come up with. And quite a few cities have come out with their RFPs. Tenders are being bid out. In a span of 2 months, you will get to know about which are the cities which are getting those buses. The policy also talks about certain number of three-wheelers and two-wheelers for these respective cities. If you look at the Indian context, public transportation primarily comprised of buses and then the three-wheelers, which is e-rickshaws in the north and in the smaller towns, and auto rickshaws in the rest of the country. And these two put together, along with two-wheelers, is the major vehicle which moves most of India. So 80 to 85% of India moves on two-wheelers, three-wheelers, and buses put together. And the policy is targeted to address these segments. Now, Niti Aayog has gone a step ahead, and also along with international think tanks like Rocky Mountain Institute, has engaged in capacity building for various city municipal corporations, the smart cities, and also there is a strong focus on making these contracts bankable. In the past, these contracts were not bankable, but progressively we see new mechanisms like escrow accounts being put in place to ensure that whoever wins the contract, these contracts are bankable. Agencies can come and finance these contracts, and you can. So the platform is set for a huge revolution to take on in the electric vehicle space.
After addressing the demand incentive, the next area that the policy needs to address and is addressed in the supply chain. So the supply chain needs to set up. Localization has to be encouraged because you can't have a forex outflow going, instead of going to the OPEC countries, going back to Asian counterparts. When you transition to EV, the forex, instead of the forex, there should be much more investment in the country, and there should be electric vehicle manufacturing, battery manufacturing, etc. happening out of the country. So today, although we are starting with imports on these segments, the global suppliers are taking India very seriously because the government has, at the central level and quite a few states have been able to communicate a very clear and a firm step forward in the direction for electric vehicles. So the supply chain incentives will address and will give an impetus to putting the supply chain in place. With the demand incentive, you have the supply as well as demand being created and handheld by the government for the next few years, which is a very good step in the right direction.
So I think, Arun, I think that is an excellent overview from an industry perspective, where you actually split the entire industry, you know, in terms of different models which are, you know, being used, specifically balancing the demand and supply and migrating more to an OPEX model as opposed to a CAPEX. But one interesting point which you touched are the involvement of states. I think, you know, from a country perspective and considering how diverse India is, and specifically, you know, for our you know, foreign friends on this call, it would be very interesting to understand that in addition to the federal incentives, are there any sort of state incentives which are being offered, you know, particularly in terms of any states? And, you know, probably I can hand it over to Siddharth. Siddharth, you know, can you just tell us if there are any sort of state incentives which are there, or what is the overview of the same? That would be great.
Yeah, thank you, Huzaifa. So in fact, the FAME II policy itself provides for the fact that apart from the central government's initiatives, states are to also complement the initiatives of the center in order to make this push towards e-mobility more effective. So there are certain ways in which states can complement the central government, especially when it comes to you know, items under the state subject, whether it be, you know, waiver of road taxes or waiver of registration fees or waiver of requirement of certain permits or even levying congestional charges to vehicles which may not be e-vehicles. So these are some of the methods that states can employ to, you know, supplement what the center is already doing. And we already see certain states which are taking a proactive step towards achieving their own e-vehicle dreams. For example, the Karnataka government is, you know, taking many steps to encourage investment in the state related to this space. It's promising to provide certain special economic zones or hubs where, you know, factories related to manufacture of e-vehicles and components can be set up. It is also envisaging the setup of a VC, dedicated VC fund, which would invest in EV startups and also give them impetus. The Maharashtrian government Maharashtra government has taken out certain initiatives. For example, it is thinking of providing, you know, free opportunity to set up charging station, EV charging stations at petrol pumps without existing petrol pumps without having to acquire any additional land. The Andhra Pradesh government is taking the step towards a complete e-mobility ecosystem by focusing on their smart cities, which is one of the approaches that they are undertaking. They're also creating demand for e-vehicles by looking to convert in a few years, within 3 or 5 years, they're looking to convert all of their state transportation fleet buses into e-buses. The Delhi government, of course, we all know about the air pollution issues in the Delhi government. They are providing at the state level their own purchase incentives at the customer level to reduce the sticker price of e-vehicles. They're also providing, you know, certain dedicated locations where charging stations can be set up. So these are a few examples I can also mention the UP government, which is looking to really encourage investment into this space, and it's providing a variety of bouquet of incentives for companies to set up a base in Uttar Pradesh. So these are some of the examples, and I think many more states will also follow suit and take a leaf out of these states, and it only time will tell how effective these measures will be.
No, I think you know, this overview is great. So I think just to sum up you know, the discussion so far, not only we have understood the incentives which are there at a federal level, but what we've also been informed is that there are some complementary or additional incentives also flowing at a state level. And to marry all of that, we have also got industry insights, you know, which plays into each of those. But having said that, it's always not a fairy tale world, right? Because I'm sure in all of this, there would be teething problems, there will be implementation problems, and there could also be bottlenecks to kind of avail federal and state incentives. So from a practical perspective, and just, you know, to let our you know, audience know, that are there any sort of hurdles or bottlenecks or issues which our experts have seen, you know, which are typically faced in this industry? And probably, you know, Siddharth, since you mentioned the state incentive, it may be a good idea if you can take lead on the same and, you know, just make our audience aware of such issues.
Yeah, Uzefa. So there are certain practical issues which might come into play. So, and this, you know, this is also, it goes to, you know, a two-way objective that the government has. One is to tackle pollution, air pollution problems, and the other is also to keep up with its Make in India initiative. So in order to combine and marry the two, what the Indian government is envisaging and has notified is that the manufacturing of EV vehicles, and in order to be eligible to avail of these incentives promised under the government schemes, you have to have, they have envisaged indigenization of the manufacture of components. Now, the policy says that various notifications might be issued from time to time, making adjustments to these requirements. But the requirements as it stands now, there is a certain list which is put out wherein companies are allowed to import those products which are on this list. Apart from that, they will have to manufacture and assemble those components locally. Now, this is in order to create jobs locally, in order to enhance the skill levels, and also to make India competitive on the world stage without just becoming, you know, without us shifting from importation of oil to importation of, you know, EV components. And like Arun very well put it, this would also be a way to also, you know, protect our forex. Having said that, this could be a bottleneck because we are still at the nascent stage of know-how, and you know, it can be looked at the other way, whether we should actually allow the industry to import the best technologies that are out there, whether we can just become a center where we assemble the best technology from all over the world and provide customers with the cheapest alternatives, or whether, you know, we allow a 2-3 year period of pain where, okay, the EV vehicles may not be, you know, the most, the cheapest or the most efficient, but in the long run, what the government is looking to do is also provide a total ecosystem where there'll be manufacturing and jobs related to that, and at the same time, it'll also achieve its objective of curbing its greenhouse emissions. There are other bottlenecks such as, you know, a requirement of registration with the Department of Heavy Industries to avail of these incentives. Now, without going into the entire, you know, detailed list of what these registration requirements are, one of the issues that I envisage is the fact that these registration certificates, these certificates to avail of these incentives are required to be reapplied every year. So maybe as time goes by and as practical issues come up, maybe this requirement to get a fresh certificate could be changed to, you know, just the requirement of renewal of a certificate. But having said that, And as you have seen in other regulations, such as the drone regulation that we have worked on, once these regulations are out and once industry players actually employ them and use them and the practical scenarios play out, then, you know, there can be consultations with the public and the industry players, and all these issues can be ironed out in the long run. So I wouldn't want to harp too much on these bottlenecks. But having said that, of course, there are bound to be, as we have seen with all other disruptive technologies.
No, I think the end note was important, that you know, we cannot move on or migrate into a perfect scenario or a perfect world. There are bound to be hiccups, and I think you know, considering the ecosystem which we are in, I am sure over a period of time we will iron it out. But having said that, there is a very important aspect I think we need to touch upon. It's probably not a bottleneck, but I think it needs to be addressed. Is the backbone of the entire EV system, which is linked to the charging infrastructure. Of course, batteries is you know, one topic, and probably we can do a series two on that. But it would be helpful if, you know, we could also have some insights on you know, issues surrounding the charging infrastructure. And for that, probably, you know, Harshal, you may want to weigh in and, you know, provide your expert inputs on the same.
Pertaining to the charging infrastructure, while the government has made various allocations for creation of the charging infrastructure in India, it has also emphasized the need for maintenance and upkeeping of these charging stations, for which specific budgetary allocation has been made. But one aspect that needs to be highlighted here is that India right now does not have its own indigenous charging standard and is reliant on foreign standards such as the European charging standard or the Japanese charging standard, which needs to be licensed for setting up charging stations in India. While the government is in the process of creating its own indigenous charging standard, because the industry till date has worked in silos and has not been able to come up with a cumulative understanding of how this charging standard can be created, only time will tell as to what is the level of advancement that we can see in the charging infrastructure area within India, because both in terms of the fast charging standard that India will adopt and the amount of impact it will create on the kind of on the strength of the e-mobility ecosystem within India.
So am I audible to the larger group? I think there is some issue on the line.
We can hear you, Zephyr.
I think we are audible. So I think thanks Harshal for providing this input. But, you know, from a perspective where we've also spoken about bottlenecks, we've also spoken about the benefits which are there, I think more importantly, it may be interesting and important to touch base upon what does the industry feel like? Because, you know, our comments have largely been from a lawyer's perspective or, you know, industry experts, but looking at it from a legal, regulatory and tax perspective. So at this point in time, it would be interesting if Arun could actually share an insight or an industry perspective in terms of broadly what do you think needs to be brought, you know, improved on these policies. Yeah, the policies are there. They may be good, they may be bad. There is an improvement required, but you know, happy to have your thoughts on it.
So today the policy gives a macro direction, which is facing in the right. Which is taking the country or the space in the right direction. That said, in terms of ground level implementation, there seems to be quite a few gaps. There seems to be a bit of ambiguity. One is standardization of charging infrastructure. The other is, it is said that EVs don't require permits, but when you actually go down to register vehicle, how do you register? There are three-wheelers in Bangalore, although an electric three-wheeler does not require a permit. When you come to register, you're not able to register and run the vehicle on the road. So there are few practical on-ground implementation challenges which the policy is not addressing to a very specific level, which needs to be corrected. Next is the taxation scheme. For regular transportation, it's 5%. For electric vehicles, it is 18% GST. So you're not incentivizing a consumer who is moving towards green mobility, which needs to change. The other is, similar to what we've seen in the IT revolution, if a single nodal agency can come up at the state level, because transitioning to EVs is not a transportation problem. It's a transportation problem. Energy distribution aspect has to be resolved, renewables has to be resolved, and city planning, because you deploy these charging stations in public and private places. So you see 3 to 4 aspects or dimensions coming into play, and maybe a single state nodal agency has to take the lead and drive this at a city level or a smart city level or at a state level. The other is about decentralization of the certification and homologation agencies. Today we are very few. For the size of the country, for the new demand that's coming in the country, the number of certifying and homologating agencies are very, very few. This needs to be decentralized. This needs to be available along with the academia. These labs have to be could be taken up by private players. So there a lot needs to be done. The other is about the capacity building that needs to be happening at the city level and at the state level in terms of putting up these charging infrastructure, procuring these three-wheelers, procuring these buses. How does states or municipalities which are not cash rich still go about this transition? How do they go about charging infrastructures, putting up, acquiring public places? What should be the modalities? What should be the standards that should prevail, or let it be competing with multiple technologies at, in the early first 3 years, and then look at standardization? So a lot more clarity and work needs to be done on the specifics at the city level and at the state level. That's it. Some states are at the forefront of solving this and converging most of the players so that deployments will be seen in a span of a year.
Okay. So I think it's not that we are there. So I think it is an overarching statement to say like everything is perfect and we are there and the growth is there, which is not true. But I think a fair and accurate statement to make is that at least we are on the right path. A few years back, you know, probably we wouldn't. Yeah, sorry for that. I think one of the international dial-ins dropped out. But I think more interestingly, what industry inputs which we are getting is that we are on the right path. We are not completely there, but at least the path is there. And if, you know, there wasn't excitement and interest, you wouldn't even be discussing it. So at this point in time, I think something which would be very relevant for our audiences is that if you want to enter India or if you want to undertake any sort of collaboration, you know, vis-a-vis this case, how would you actually do it, right? And the intent is just to provide an overview, and probably we can have a follow-up series two of this webinar to talk more on these models and issues. So based on our experience, probably we've seen there are 4 ways to do it. If you want to enter into this market, one suggestion is that, you know, test the water, understand what are your strengths and, you know, where you can leverage. So initially, you know, there can be some sort of a marketing slash testing arrangements which can be undertaken where you actually don't require to, you know, to set up a physical presence in India. Once there is some amount of awareness, then probably that's step two. Of course, it need not be step two, but just in terms of discussion and dialogue, I'm saying it. There could be distributorship arrangements which can be actually evaluated, right? You know, there are some local sourcing requirements which are there vis-a-vis FAME II. But towards the OEMs, but there is something which can actually be evaluated whereby if there is, you know, companies, you know, into some charging infrastructure and batteries, some sort of components and all, if they can actually appoint distributors within India to actually, you know, kind of leverage that. The third thing, which is more akin to the Make in India initiative and actually boost the, you know, 50% local, you know, manufacturing slash sourcing requirements, is actually technology collaborations which are there. You know, in the past we've seen in other industries whereby foreign counterparts actually license technology or get into technology collaborations with Indian partners, and that's actually a good way to further develop impetus and expertise on the market on ground. Of course, there needs to be certain risks and risk mitigations which need to be factored. And lastly, depending on the comfort and the sophistication, specifically with the law of the land, lay of the land, and probably somebody in India, you may want to set up shop directly, come as a wholly owned subsidiary in India, or if you're not ready for that, you can actually set up some sort of an equity joint venture with a partner in India. It could be an organic joint venture, it could be an inorganic joint venture, or it could just be some sort of a joint venture where the foreign party is just using the manufacturing facilities of the Indian partner. So there are multiple variants to all of this, but having said that, in all of these, there are very complicated tax, regulatory and legal issues. One reason why I say this is that India is still evolving on these subjects from a legal and tax perspective. The laws are not settled. So for example, if you get into any sort of an arrangement whereby you want to repatriate money from India, it could be under the name of royalties, fees for technical services, dividends, distribution fees, whatever you may call it, right? There could be certain tax challenges, in terms of withholding taxes which would apply in India. There could be some sort of limits and thresholds in terms of how much money you can upstream, specifically if it's in the nature of, say, dividends, for example. That's one issue. The other practical issue from an operational perspective is in terms of how do you protect your IP, right? If there is some sort of foreign collaboration which is happening and the foreign partner is actually lending or licensing its IP in India, ensuring that how does the IP interplay vis-a-vis the Indian venture? If there's further development in India, who owns it? Is there some sort of cross-licensing? What are the exploitation rights? What is the term and territory? Does it limit itself only to India, goes outside India? This is not an exhaustive list. There are many more issues which need to be thought through. And of course, I'll conclude by saying that for any sort of venture which needs to happen, one also needs to think about the exit. Unfortunately, we don't pay too much of attention when we start the business. But a very important aspect is also thinking through exits and which are tax efficient and, of course, which are regulatory efficient for some reasons if you want to monetize the exit. This was a general overview in terms of how do you enter the market. We would not get into much detail as of now. We can take this for a series 2 follow-up session. But on this note, considering the paucity of time, I would like to straight away move to Arun. From a closing comment perspective, more from an industry perspective, Arun, final thoughts in terms of, where do we go from here?
Yeah. So today in India, the demand for EVs is picking up. Infrastructure shall get created by people and private entities and by the government players coming together. There needs to be more clarity on the policy at the macro and at the specific level. And you see the right factors are coming in together at this juncture, because at some point of time in the past, maybe the technology wasn't ready, or the oil prices were not favorable, or the governments were not very positive, or the consumers were not ready to adopt. But today we see all the factors or all the triggers being aligned in favor of this electric vehicle revolution in India. And these are exciting times, and once the consumer drives electric, they will never go back. Great times ahead.
Absolutely. I think on that note, it was a very punching two words or three words which Arun said, great times ahead. And I think we've had a fabulous panel. I would like to thank each one of you. And what better note than to just reiterate in terms of great times ahead. On this, we would open the floor to questions, from our participants and audience. Over to you guys.
Sure. Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask questions, please press star and one. We have the first question from the line of Sarthak Shukla from Kurtz International. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sarthak is joined by me. My name is Abhishek. I'm director at Kurtz International, head of the public policy division. We are also working on electric mobility, but seeing it rather bottom up from the city level upwards. Now, there are a couple of things that we didn't hear and would like to know a little bit more about, typically from the industry side, is what are the regulatory uncertainties that they foresee which could actually impact the real uptake at the city level. For example, I mean, there are a lot of regulatory uncertainties that some of them you spoke about, for example, standardization of charging infrastructure, but there are issues with safety in case of accidents, standardizations of batteries, etc., etc. But when you talk, when you do talk about integration of electric mobility, one needs to also understand at city level what are the challenges that one could face in order to have a just transition from a citizen-consumer perspective. So from an industry point of view, I would like to hear if you have already identified some of those challenges.
Yeah, so the industry is fairly aware about what can be the impediments to a faster adoption. And they're working in close tandem with the state governments or city municipalities in various places. That said, few cities are more agile and more progressive than the others. And you see the deployments coming about for electric vehicles in those cities. The northern North Capital region is one example. Bangalore is another example. Andhra Pradesh is another example. Gujarat. So what you see is the select city municipalities, which is fairly progressive, which is fairly agile, which has been at the forefront of such transitions in the past, are creating or are removing these roadblocks or impediments to enable these adoption. That said, in India, it will might take a while before these charging infrastructures are standardized, because you have to see various technology solutions being implemented in the field. Consumers, the respect, each of them may be targeting a particular specific mobility application and a segment. You have to see what is their response to it and then improve on it. So you will see multiple solutions being offered to various mobility segments. It can be for goods carriers, you have e-commerce delivery, that's one segment. Then there can be the three-wheeler application, there is a bus application, and then you have two-wheelers, again, for personal mobility as well as for fleet application. All of these require different type of perhaps charging solutions, vehicle formats, and you will see the standards coming up over a period of time. So today there will be some ambiguity when you start with, but that is not stopping any of the players to actually deploy. They started off in customer field trials or pilots in different parts of the country, which you're already reading in the news. And within a span of a few months and maybe mid of next year, there are quite a few deliberations the industry is having with the ministry. The ministry is receptive and there is decision making happening. So we will see some change in that direction. That's it. Few states and few cities are to be looked out for. The next was about the safety aspect. Yes, whenever a transition like this happens, even ICE engines had safety issues when they started, CNG, LPG, all of them went through that cycle. So EVs also will go through that cycle when you are witnessing certain issues around that front. That said, the media, the first respondents of to such safety incidents have to be trained on how they can actually respond in such a situation at the municipality level. How do we deal with it? And even the passengers also need to be trained in this regard. So should the drivers be. And we should be progressively improving our safety standards and safety tests that is conducted to ensure that the vehicles and the infrastructure is certified and homologated before they are actually run on the field. So the changes are happening, and there may be few incidents that may be witnessed at different parts of the country, but it has been the case with any of those transitions, be it CNG, be it LPG, be it diesel. So yes, there will be a time period of 1 or 2 years where that might be possible, but then the industry has to step up the game. The first responders have to be much more trained and proactively responding to such situations.
And probably just to add a legal point to that, Arun, India has a new consumer protection law, the draft of which is already out. We are just waiting for it to become effective. So the standards and all of them are laid down. And interestingly, for the first time, we have the concept of product liability, which is coming. And there are, certain additional provisions in terms of having the entire chain in the ecosystem liable from a manufacturing perspective. So I think these sort of things also somewhere add up to a more kosher ecosystem from a safety perspective, because more and more accountability probably may flow going forward.
Yeah. Also, for the participants in the developed countries, one aspect to keep in mind is that the level of ruggedization that the product or solution requires in India is very high. And that is to do with the conditions, the ambient temperature, the dust, etc., which is already prevalent in various parts of the country. So it may not be how you have in a developed country out here. So the solutions need to be put out through the ruggedization. We need to know the experience, and then additional safety features shall be built in over a period of time.
Okay. Thanks. Hello. Can you still hear me?
Yes, we can.
I just have one follow-up question, also very small one, but a very relevant one.
Please go ahead.
Is there any assessment from the industry side, typically, on what kind of impact? If you had run your own simulations with regards to tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 cities, what kind of impact would it have on distribution utilities in terms of their revenues if you're talking about integration of electric mobility?
Okay, your question is about impact of revenues of the distribution companies, which are primarily
electricity distribution utilities, because that seems to be the main worry when it comes to any kind of renewable transition at the utility level.
Yeah. So the situation in India is there are few states which are surplus in terms of their energy generation, and they're already supplying into their neighboring states. That's on one side. The other as a point is the DISCOMs, whatever said and done, most of them are not in a strong financial condition. And they are trying to understand how they can be part of this transition. Do they really own up or go downstream to take up the charging infrastructure, which has to be there for the consumer vehicles or personal mobility? Or do they look at the public transportation, which are the buses, and is that where they can have a major play? Because the state transport undertaking and the state DISCOM can come together to put the infrastructure for buses. Along with the state DISCOMs, you also have the oil and marketing companies who want to contribute to this revolution and want to get their piece out of it. So their view is whatever be the vehicle fuel that the vehicle is using, be it petrol, be it diesel, be it CNG, be it LPG, be it EV, we want to have a fair contribution in that. My customers today come refuel with diesel or petrol from my station. Why can't they do the same with electric vehicles? I can be the provider for that. So in India, you see all these players trying and experimenting and trying and figuring it out with various solutions that are available. There shall be a certain amount of resistance, hesitation, proactiveness, going the extra mile in these cases, which we'll have to see in the next few years. But that said, when you have a major DISCOM in the city coming, be it a public DISCOM or a private DISCOM, it gives a strong boost to that particular initiative. And also when you see the large oil and marketing companies, which is primarily state-owned, coming together to back up the EV change that's happening in India, these are positive signs. The nitty-gritty is what model do they choose, how much of their revenues will be impacted, are there alternate ways of monetizing revenue streams, remains to be seen.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. A reminder to participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask questions, you may press star and one. There are no further questions in queue.
Okay, so I think on that note, probably we can conclude this webinar. Separately, I'm sure the audience and participants would be writing to us. You have our contact details in the invite. Feel free to write to us. If it's an industry-centric question, we'll happy to kind of internally liaise with Arun and accordingly respond to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Nishit Desai Associates, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.